I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you. Introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Sendit Philippines. Sendit is the leading payment gateway in the Philippines. Allow your business to accept payments seamlessly from cards, e-wallets, retail outlets, and local banks. For more information, visit sendit.co. Also powered by B21, a platform which helps you start your journey with cryptocurrencies. Visit b21.io/hustleshare and get $2 upon signing up. Also by Podmetrics, the easiest way to monetize your podcast. Sign up now at podmetrics.co for free and use the code HustleShare.
And so it was really about bringing in sharp talent and then really investing in people growth and development from day one and building a culture of openness and transparency. That's the culture we built, right, of empowerment.
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Hustle Share Podcast. Again, it's a brand new season, and a brand new season, we get the big guns up front. Because again, we've been trying to get this girl for the longest time. The first time we tried to do the record, she got sick. And the second time, I was the one who got sick. But finally, but again, before anything else, let's welcome one of the hottest startups in the land. And if you haven't heard, where the hell were you? Because we will have the founder and CEO of Edamama, Miss Bella Gupta D'Souza. Whoop, whoop. Welcome to the show, Bella. Finally, you're here.
Hey, Ron. Yes, finally I'm here. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm a huge fan, and it's great to be here.
All right. So now, again, we're gonna go right into the jugular because we've been asking this. And again, we want to make sure that we have the biggest guns up front for a brand new season. Now we're in season six. But even though we're in season six, we have to go a little old school and ask you the million-dollar question. Bella, what's your hustle?
Well, Ron, as cheesy as it may sound, I think my hustle is being a mom boss, living out my purpose, which is turning my passion for parenting into a meaningful venture that, you know, hopefully inspires and supports women as mothers, as consumers, as business owners, and even as business leaders.
That is amazing. So again, if that's going to be the narrative of how we're going to do it, because as a hustler, I really think that running a business and parenting has a lot of similar parallels on how you need to eke out the best for your children, whether it's a startup or it's a child, right? We have to really bring out the best in them. But before I get carried away, I need you to buckle up because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. The child seat, huh? 1 second. All right. Make sure it's buckled up. All right. We're all the way back. And I wanted to ask you, because Bella, again, I've been low-key stalking you for a while now since your AdSpark days. But I want to know, how was growing up like? And I wanted to find out, what was it like? What was it? What was your early influences? Is it a rough childhood? Is it a good childhood? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, Ron. So firstly, you know, I'm originally from India, but certainly consider myself a third culture kid. And my story really begins with my parents, two people with very humble beginnings from Kashmir in India, which is where I'm from, who were very keen to explore life outside our home country. And, you know, while many immigration stories for Indian families involve moving west to the US or England, we actually went east. So my family moved to Japan when I was 3 years
old. Japan. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
And this wasn't a move to Tokyo or Osaka. You know, we went to Kobe, which in the 80s was a relatively quiet, you know, seaside town. My dad worked as an insurance executive. My mom was a school teacher. And being a small kid in a very homogenous society at the time was perhaps one of the most impressionable experiences of my life. Having spent, you know, most of my childhood in Japan taught me very early on that identity isn't as hard defined as you think. You know, I grew up with a very strong imprint of Japanese culture, which I think has stayed with me to this day. And in many ways, if you think about Edamame, right, it's an ode to that Japanese past. But I still am very grounded in my Indian roots. And, you know, growing up watching my parents as immigrants embrace a new culture and learn the language and work hard to build their lives, I think that's really been such a big part of what's shaped me to also, you know, kind of have this insatiable desire to explore and see the world. And I'm really thankful for that wanderlust, which I think my parents instilled in me. And I think I have that kind of free spirit now, which has also, I suppose, meant that I've not always thought very conventionally about my career and aspirations.
Sure.
And so from Japan, we moved to Thailand, where I spent my teenage years and finished high school. Ended up in India for college. And since then, you know, since working, have lived in the US and England, in Vietnam, and now the Philippines. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy upbringing, but really thankful for it. I think it instilled a sense of adaptability and openness to new cultures, which, you know, makes it all the better.
I have a question about, you know, immigrant families always, because again, I often hear this to immigrants of startup founders going into the UK or in the US. I'm not sure if this is the same in your case, but typically Asian parents become tiger parents because the stakes are so high. Yeah. And it's a little bit of a tough love environment where, you know, you can't F it up. Because they understand. Yeah. So, and sometimes what happens is that becomes a chip on the shoulder of us founders, really doing whatever it takes to perform well. Some people cave in, some people rise to the occasion. It looks like you did rise to the occasion, but were the stakes also high as well for your end?
You know, I would say that even though we were immigrants to a new country and, you know, we were doing this, you know, more than once, you know, we grew up pretty comfortable. I think my parents always made sure we were very financially secure as a family. So the kind of fire in the belly aspiration was really less about, you know, I need to pay it back to my parents or I need to do well so that, you know, my children down the line never have to struggle in a similar way. But it was more around, you know, and I really credit my father so much. He's always been just a really passionate, ambitious guy. And you know, he always, you know, really tried to inspire us to think big and ambitiously about our lives. And, you know, we had so many of these sessions as kids with our parents and, you know, kind of hearing him talk to us about their humble beginnings, right? And, and how far they had to come to live out their dreams. And I think that's really what inspired me was just, you know, how do I, you know, similarly live life fully, right? And realize my potential as quickly as I can and, you know, carry on that legacy, I suppose, for my parents. But, you know, the funny thing is, as I grew older, I think the very interesting change I saw in my parents and this is really where I think a lot of Indian women out there might connect to me on is the minute, you know, I turned 25, okay. I joke about how I was like a milk carton that was about to hit its expiration date, right?
Yes.
And all my parents could think about was to marry me off, right?
What?
and listen, we could have a completely separate session as to why so many Asian parents place this irrational responsibility on themselves to yeah. marry off their children, right? Mm-hmm. To the point where like you have these marriage funds set aside for you, particularly as a daughter. And my parents had three daughters to reckon with. So wow. I think that was the turning point for me to some extent, because I felt this tremendous pressure and expectation placed upon me by my parents to get married and quote unquote settle down, right? Wow. And it was to the point where my dad was actually signing me up to go on blind dates with, you know, like people he considered suitable men,
wow.
right?
Wow.
And meanwhile, I was plotting the ultimate revenge, which was to go to business school in the US, right? So
that's amazing.
I think that to me seems like very etched in my mind as a turning point for me.
And I've seen that again in other cultures, not just in Indian landscape. I've seen this documentary about Chinese women that, again, the magic number, I think, is 25. But once they eclipse that, they even have a term for it called leftover women that is frowned upon if you eclipse 25 and you're not yet married, right? Yeah. And then they really, again, they also aggressively look for men to marry them off. But the problem in China is that with the one-child policy before really affected the ratio of men to women there. So there's more men and less women. So it's hard to really match them out, right? Now, I wanted to ask about culture, because being well-traveled, I've had numerous hustlers here as well that have been around the world, and they pick up the nuances and the disciplines of their own country that they that they stayed in. I want to know, what did you pick up from the Japanese way of living that you still use now, also from the Thai point of view? Mix that up with the Indian culture that you have.
Firstly, I would say the accents, right? So I'm like a chameleon. It's so funny. Like even with my team now in the Philippines, sometimes I'll switch over to a Taglish kind of accent, and they find it really funny. Like sometimes I talk in Taglish and the response I get back is in someone speaking Tagalog and I have no idea what they're saying, right? and you know, I can switch off. I can switch to an Indian, a Thai, you know, Japanese style of speaking, which I mean, that's kind of the more shallow answer to your question. But I think, you know, more broadly, just being so adaptable to different environments, I feel so at home, even if I'm, you know, even now when I go back to Japan, I feel so at home if I'm on a train, local train there versus if I'm eating street food in Bangkok and, you know, arguing with a taxi driver. Or, you know, my husband says when I go to India, like the true Indian in me comes out, right? Because I'm super comfortable in my own skin when I'm back home in India. And I think that's what travel gives you. It gives you the sense of comfort in adapting to whatever environment you're in and, you know, kind of feeling more connected to a place, right?
Now, once you, again, been ready after college to really get into the corporate world, what were your early hustles and what are the jobs that you look for and what did you learn in these jobs that you took at the first few steps in your career?
Yeah. So as the convention goes, right, any good Indian child will want to be an engineer, a doctor, or a lawyer.
Right. any Asian, actually.
Right, right. Yep. But of course, being the nonconformist that I argue my parents anyways encouraged me to be until I turned 25, of course, is I wanted to pursue a creative path. So I studied liberal arts in college and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do when I finished college, but you know, as fate would have it, I somehow found myself in the office of one of the most respected and influential business leaders in India at the time, who is the chairman of Infosys Technologies.
Wow.
Mr. Narayana Murthy, or NRN as we call him. Yep. And you know, Ron, I'll never forget to this date. So there was this, you know, call for applications. And, you know, I put in my application, never expecting anything to really come out of it. And then I get a call from his secretary one day saying, you know, he'd like to meet me and he would have liked to meet this weekend, but unfortunately he has a conflict. He has to meet the Prime Minister of India And I thought to myself, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's okay, right? I'm a nobody here. So long story short, went through a very competitive recruitment process, was extremely fortunate to be given the offer to join Infosys. And I would say I was like part of that 1% of people in this company of 45,000 people when I joined that didn't have an engineering degree, right? So I started off my career at Infosys in Bangalore, working in branding and corporate wow. strategy planning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so my one of my main jobs was to issue the company's strategy newsletter every month, right? And it went out at that time to like 50,000 people. And it was such a nerve-wracking experience for a fresh grad, right? To be able to write all the content, put it all together, and then make sure, you know, I would, you know, have to make sure there was no spelling mistakes, everything was factually correct, and then having it shared out to the entire employee base. Because when you're a company of that size, you know, obviously town halls and things happen, but you know, the strategy newsletter was such an important way to communicate what the priorities of the business were. So, you know, I thought it was a really great opportunity for me to get to know kind of the early, it was an early learning opportunity in kind of business, but also by working so closely with the founders, I just feel like that was for me so inspiring. And it, ultimately, I think what catalyzed my own interests in pursuing entrepreneurship down the line.
Absolutely. And again, if you have that access to the founders that early in your first jobs, that would be, again, a gift that keeps on giving, because you'll have access not just to, of course, the skills, but also the little nuances that you can learn from them. What were those things that you learned, other than, of course, the skills that you typically get in a first job? But what are the indelible marks they left in your career, especially from Narayan and Murthy, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you know anything about this incredible individual, Ron, you know, he started Infosys with a paid up capital of $250, right? Today,
what?
Yeah, today it's a multi-billion dollar organization. And the tagline of Infosys is powered by intellect, driven by values. And, you know, the values aspect, right, was so powerful to me. I have till date not found a company that I felt was so deeply entrenched in positive values in the workplace and incredible humility on the part of the founders, right? So Mr. Murthy to this date, you know, travels economy, right? I mean, he's, you know, wow. really wealthy.
Regardless of the distance, I cannot.
Yeah,
if it's anything over 8 hours, my back just gives in.
What? Incredibly humble people, right? Who I think till they were at Infosys just did an incredible job of upholding and living out their values every day and kind of walking the talk, right? Which for a young professional like myself to have access to that so early on in my career, I felt like set this benchmark for me, right? That I Correct. Really to this date try to live by.
All right. Now that's amazing. Now, okay, you stayed 4 years there and you went all the way to the other side of the world in the Bay Area to now work as a consultant, but only for a short time. But what did you see in the Silicon Valley that impacted your career?
Yeah. So I think having that start that I did at Infosys and, you know, after a few years in Bangalore, I moved to the UK office, and this is 2008. Okay. This was a crazy time, right? The global financial crisis. I literally saw Lehman Brothers go out because the building I was working in London at the time was literally next to the Lehman Brothers office.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So it was a really strange time. And on top of that, you know, my dad kept setting me up on these blind dates. Right? It was like doom and gloom for me. So, you know, coming back, right, to say like, okay, what's the ultimate revenge here? Is I'm going to apply to business school. I'm really going to try to make that switch towards becoming an entrepreneur. I've had corporate experience thus far, and I feel like I need more skills. I need more training in how to make that transition towards ultimately starting something of my own down the line. And I looked at a few options, was extremely intimidated, right, by all the business school options that I had. And so I decided there was, you know, I had a chance to visit Stanford, you know, sat in on a class. And I mean, this is something they encourage you to do before you even apply, right? To
just they allow that?
Yeah, they do. I even sat in on an HBS class and I said, there's no way I'm going to fit in here. Like I can't even imagine myself here.
Right.
No offense to anyone who went to HBS, right? It's just like fit, right? Because I, at the time, I didn't really feel like I had a conventional background. And in MBA terms, as they call it, I was more of a poet than a quant, right?
Right.
And so I put in my application to this MBA program. It was in the Valley, which was also very exciting to me because I felt like that was where you want to be, right? If you really want to be an entrepreneur.
Yes.
And I was a round three applicant. So, you know, to anybody out there who's applying later on in the process, there's hope, right? So I was incredibly surprised when I found out I got in, and it was, you know, I felt very fortunate because in general, it was, you know, the economy was kind of looking to be a bit unpredictable, and you know, it was a good opportunity to just go away for a couple of years and get a little further away from the pressures of, you know, that my family was putting on me at the time.
The blind dates.
The blind date. And I remember having a conversation with my mom about it. Hi, mom, you know, but I remember I told her that I got into this program and her reaction was to start crying. And I thought they were happy tears, only for me to later learn that she was just so upset, right? Like, you know, instead of securing my future, I was putting myself in debt and going away for 2 years. So the milk was not only going to curdle, it was about to become cheese by the time I was in business school, right? That's kind of the way my parents were seeing it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, but, you know, I went and it was, you know, my 2 years there were absolutely transformational. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Now, when you came back again, you went all the way to Thailand. And this is, well, I didn't know this about you, but you were the co-founder and COO of Groupon in Thailand. Let me just share some, my first real job outside a call center was in Groupon Philippines. It was called Beconomic here before.
Yes.
And that's where I learned how to freaking sell.
Yeah.
That's where I learned how to hustle, that I'm not going to go into a meeting walking away with no contract.
Yeah.
I became one of their top sellers, and that's where I found my contract. Like, I'm pretty good at this shit.
Yeah.
You know? Now, I want to know from a point of view of a co-founder, because I saw it in the flesh of how culture was, how fast-paced it was, how crazy the targets was, and how crazy the competition was as well. My goodness. But from a point of view of a co-founder and COO in Thailand, what was it like?
Well, it was great in the sense that I felt like it was a homecoming for me, right? Having finished high school there, I really picked Thailand. It wasn't kind of accidental in the sense. I mean, I firstly graduating when I was passing out of Stanford, I looked around me and decided I wanted to go back to Asia. I kind of didn't want that conventional like product manager role in the Valley.
Yeah.
Consultant. I saw the opportunity in Asia, really wanted to be part of it. And, you know, took the opportunity in Thailand because I felt like it was a market I had some understanding of.
Yeah.
And so went back. And I think for many foreigners going to a country like Thailand, it might be a harder landing because, you know, language can be a barrier.
Yeah.
There are a lot of cultural differences. So I think from that perspective, it wasn't as challenging for me, but certainly, I you know, when you're describing your time with Groupon and Beconomic prior to that, I think Groupon was going through a very interesting transformation as a company. They had grown so fast, right, that outside of the U.S. at least, Groupon was largely, the culture was driven by Rocket. And there was, I think Thailand and Korea were the only two markets that were organic offices.
Oh.
So we built from scratch rather than acquire.
Acquiring, and, right.
Yeah, so we really arrived there with nothing, right? Just our suitcases. And, you know, Ron, it's so crazy. But my co-founder at the time, who was this German guy, he was in charge of getting the office lease. Oh, and he came to me one day, and you know, we were in a co-working space at the time. And he said, I found the perfect office. We're gonna set up the Groupon office in this building. And I said, that's great. Can you show it to me? And we get there and it turns out that's the exact same building my dad used to work in.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a sign right there.
Right, right. And so then we just got to work, right? Groupon at the time, I think, was one of the hottest e-commerce companies globally. So I think attracting talent wasn't as hard. It was a templatized model by then, right? So we had the dev team out of Germany that kind of already built the platform for us. So really the focus was onboarding people and onboarding sellers as quickly as possible. Yeah. And because competition was already heating up in the space, there were incumbents already in the market. It wasn't as hard of a sell to merchants. I think, you know, explaining the concept wasn't a challenge. So we went from kind of arriving in our suitcases to launch in like 3 months. And, you know, it was a crazy ride for a year before I decided to move out.
But what were the biggest challenges for you? Because again, you've had experience before. But now as founder, what was the, again, being the head honcho, building a team, you know, I mean, this is, you have, it's technically home court advantage for you, but you weren't the incumbent. And being at the driver's seat is always a different ride when you're riding shotgun. What were the biggest challenges for you, because since this is your first time, that you found difficult to overcome at first?
Yeah, you know, I would say, Ron, I was still pretty inexperienced, right? At this point, I'm still in my mid-20s. And I think getting over that imposter syndrome and realizing, like, you know, I think just embracing the responsibility, I think I had my moments where I really felt overwhelmed by all of it. And, you know, you also coming back to Asia, you have to unlearn a lot of things. I think that 2 years in Silicon Valley might actually tint your glasses a little bit, right? And you realize, like, applying some of your learnings from an American classroom on an Asian employee, it may actually backfire, right? And we have some crazy stories about kind of what happened along the way and some hard lessons we had to learn. But so I think one is just having the humility to know that you don't have all the answers, and that, you know, we really have to, if there's any success we achieve, it's a collective one. It's drawing on everyone's strengths rather than positioning us as the co-founders as kind of the know-it-alls, right? It was also really challenging because it was a bit chaotic in terms of the tech team sits in Germany, the marketing team is somewhere else, and they have preset budgets for you. So there was to some extent limitations in terms of what we could actually do on our own, what decisions we could make independently. And, you know, just kind of bringing the team along on a very aggressive growth path. And, you know, that also, as you can appreciate, as you were describing yourself, can sometimes be a challenge, right?
I totally agree. I still remember how difficult it was cascading some things that were out of our control in the Groupon Philippines back then. And then I realized, you know what? I think I've learned enough. I'm going to try startup, which was one of the hardest things I've ever done. Good thing I turned out well in the end, but my God, those are easily one of the hardest times in my life after I left Groupon. But before we talk about your next jump, let's take our first break. And when we come back, let's talk about how you got into the side of the Philippines and launch AdSmart as well. Well, let's talk about that more after the break. Hey hustlers, it's been over a year and a half since the pandemic has started and completely bamboozled us because it changed and altered how business is done in the Philippines. But if there's a silver lining that I've seen, the businesses and startups that thrive now are those who are not just digital, but also make it easy for their customers to pay them. And the thing is, no matter how great you think your product is, your startup won't scale and achieve real product market fit if you don't do an omni-channel approach in getting your customers' payments. Now, we've discussed so many options of how to get that done in this podcast already. However, what if you can just get that done using just one product? And that's why I highly recommend that you guys use Sendit. Sendit Philippines is the leading payment gateway in the country, and they allow businesses to painlessly and seamlessly accept payments from their customers. And these payment channels include credit cards, direct debit, e-wallets like GCash, PayMy, and GrabPay, retail outlets, and Pay Later. Now, I'm not going to recommend this if we are not a user ourselves. We use Sendit in Podcast Network Asia and getting payments from our sponsors and also disbursing money to our podcasters. Now, it's not just us, because there's a lot of legit Filipino startups that achieve scale that are using Sendit to get this done, just like our friends from Kumu. Now, if you're interested to use it for your business or your startup, we're going to make it very easy for you to get started because you are a listener of Hustle Share. And that's why we're going to give you access to Sendit's SME program, which is Sendit's org-wide initiative to help our SME customers grow and scale. Through this program, they will waive up to 1.6 million pesos per business in free transactions just by signing up today. And it's only applicable to new Sendit merchants and for transactions excluding cards. So if you're interested, just click the link in the description box of this episode to find out how to join. So if you have a business or startup that's gaining momentum now, I highly suggest you start investing in this infrastructure like Sendit to allow you to scale, not just now, but for a post-pandemic world. All right, let's get back to the show.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back for a break. We are still with Bella Gupta D'Souza again. Now you're married here. You know, I don't know if you want to talk about the marriage, but you know, you are heavily being hooked up by your parents. But I want to find out from Thailand. You've never been in the Philippines, or if you have, probably just for a vacation. How did the AdSpark opportunity happen? Because again, AdSpark is credit where credit is due. Okay, AdSpark now is our partner in Podcast Network Asia.
Awesome.
Podcast mainstream. So thank you, AdSpark. Again, your mother hen. Lots of you, we have a partner. There you go. So shout out also the current CEO, Gretchen Largoza, who's doing an amazing job also carrying the torch.
Hi, Gretchen. Yes, I've met Gretchen before. I'm so glad that she's taken the helm. So one tidbit of information. So lo and behold, as the rom-coms go, right, Ron? I arrived at GSB, you know, hell-bent on making my 2 years there worth it and really focusing on myself. But I was paired up with a buddy when I got to Stanford, who is now my husband.
Oh, there you go.
So, Yeah, he was assigned to be my buddy. He took his job extremely seriously.
From buddy to hubby. There you go.
From buddy to hubby. So from MBA to MRS. Right? So yeah, so Nish, my amazing husband, also moved back to Asia after business school and worked in a field very different to me. So his career really started in kind of the oil and gas, natural resources, power plant kind of side of things, industrials basically. And so he was with an American power company after business school based in Vietnam for a couple of years, who were then
pretty close to Thailand back then.
Yeah, pretty close to Thailand. So we were long distance and then planning a wedding in between. And so right after we got married, he was transferred with the same company to the Philippines. And so I was still at Groupon in Thailand. He was in the Philippines, but obviously we knew at some point we had to, one of us had to make the sacrifice. Right. And we literally flipped the coin. And
what?
I'm so glad that it heads was Manila, because that's what it landed on. And so I decided 1 year after launching Groupon in Thailand, I moved to Manila. And I was a bit reluctant, to be honest. I had known very little about the Philippine market. Okay. Didn't really know what to expect, right? So moved to the Philippines, and Globe happened very quickly. I think a couple of months after I moved here, I had one of our first friends in Manila was kind enough to introduce me to Peter Bithos, who would end up becoming my boss at Globe.
Wow.
And, you know, I remember meeting Peter for breakfast one day, and there was a secret I was hiding at the time.
Which was?
Which was that I was expecting.
Okay. And the real Edamama is now trying to be a mama.
Right. And, you know, I really, the reason I say it was a secret is because I remember very vividly Googling before I met Peter, which was like, should you declare that you're, you're expecting when you go to a job interview?
What did Google say?
Funnily enough, Ron, and I'm not kidding, they said, you have no obligation to declare.
Oh, okay.
So, of course, I go to meet Peter. We met at Wildflower in BGC. Okay. I still remember. And I sat down, and I think one of the first things I said is, I'm expecting. And I want you to know that, because I know there's a lot of, you know, I'm really excited about whatever opportunities might be available. I'm really interested in what Globe's trying to do. But, you know, I want to get off on the right path here. And he, you know, I will never forget Peter's response, which is, congratulations, that's so amazing, when can you start? Right? Wow. And you know, I think that stayed with me till this date, because it takes incredible trust and just, you know, great, I don't know how to explain it, but I feel like that just was
faith.
I knew. Yeah. You know, I just knew in that moment I wanted to be part of this organization. And Globe really has been a big blessing for me. I really couldn't have hoped for a better opportunity. It was a soft landing for me into the Philippine work culture, into the consumer market and the startup ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And AdSpark at the time was just a concept on paper. It's something that Ernest and Peter at the time knew Globe had a right to play in. You know, there was opportunity here. They had GCash, they had a content kind of vertical they were trying to also spin off. And then they knew they wanted to do something in digital marketing. And when I came in, which was in early 2013, the Philippines was kind of on this wave, right? Where digital marketing was really starting to become mainstream. And so we were able to ride this wave and scale up very quickly. We went from a small office in Salcedo Street in Legazpi Village to then moving into the Globe Tower when that opened, to then spinning off and getting our own office in 2015.
Behind Wilcon. Is that Wilcon? That big green building, whatever that was. There
Panorama.
You go.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
I love
it. And yeah, you know, with AdSpark, it was just not only an incredible experience, I think it really was a great training ground for me to ultimately end up doing Edamama, right?
That's amazing. And I want to delve in a little bit more, because with AdSpark, was it like a digital ad agency at the get-go, or was it a different transition as well? Because again, this was totally monumental to have some your own agency, especially for a telco, to have an agency in-house, right? Because typically big conglomerates would have to deploy it to an agency, you know, the typical, the what have yous, the ones that are always meeting up during with Digicon and whatnot, the international ones, but for it to spin off. And what were the adjustments also that you had to do when you were running it? Because again, coming from the mothership, I don't know if that's what you called it too, you know, and spinning it off, you know, there's also adjustments that you have to make because also you have to protect the global agenda.
Mm. Yeah. You know, when AdSpark started, our revenues were entirely from SMS ads, right?
Right. Which, if you think about it.
Right.
Because I got free stuff from AdSpark when guestlist.ph and Partyfile
back then. Right. SMS ads was really where we started. And so that felt a lot more, I guess, attached to the telco aspect of what we were doing. But I think the vision of this company from the beginning was pretty well aligned between myself and Peter and the rest of the board, which was that the goal for AdSpark was really to go after what the market opportunity was rather than to just serve the interest of Globe, right? And in fact, in our first couple of years, Globe wasn't even our client. We had to earn that business. We had to pitch to Globe to win that account, so to speak, right? And so up until the time that I was there, a majority of our revenues as a venture came from outside of Globe. It came from working with agencies to help them set up their mobile marketing kind of support. And it was working with enterprise clients to, again, do mobile marketing. And most importantly and closest to my heart was to empower kind of the SMEs, right? Who at that time really were still even struggling to build websites, right? They were still very much offline. So that's really, you know, the first phase for AdSpark was really around staying independent and really catering to the opportunity that was outside of Globe.
That's amazing.
Leveraging Globe assets.
Absolutely. And I want to now find out, since again, you're founder and CEO, you're the first, where the buck ends and stops. I want to understand also, who did you choose as your teammates, or who were your initial teams? How did you build a team culture? Because one thing that's here, I'll just flex a little bit, basing it off of your LinkedIn. You had yearly attrition below 10%. Yeah. That means people love staying and working with you, right? You grew the business and revenues 35x in 4 years. That's fucking crazy. That's amazing. And more, you grew the team all to 150. My God, that's startup hustle right there in the best form. But how did you even build that up from its foundation?
You know, Ron, I've always taken a lot of interest in people. And I truly believe that ultimately your success or failure as a venture rides so much on your ability to hire the right people and build the right culture in your organization. And firstly, you know, credit to our mothership for always giving us autonomy and independence. I think there was a lot of trust placed from day one, which I, you know, again, appreciate so much, right? And then from a hiring perspective, I think we were lucky at the time, you know, we really focused on young talent, you know, graduating from uni, who were, as we described them, they were the true digital natives, right? Mm. And it was important for us to hire from this base versus focusing on what we saw as the more experienced talent in the market, but that was more of a digital migrant. Like they were trying to learn digital because they came from a more traditional advertising background, right? They were more TV, radio, print.
iMedia, they used to call it. There it
was. Yeah, right. And what we found in the younger talent was that they understood where marketing was going. They wanted to be part of this digital marketing wave. And so it was really about bringing in sharp talent, you know, driven talent, and then really investing in people growth and development from day one, and building a culture of openness and transparency. And, you know, this is something that I think is so important, right? And I struggled with it initially. I remember we would be in so-called ManCom meetings and no one would speak apart from me, right? And it became like mandatory. Like, I want to know what your point of view on something is rather than me telling you what we need to do. And I saw that shift. I still remember, if you ask the people who were part of AdSpark in our first 3-4 years, mm-hmm. that's the culture we built, right? Of empowerment of our people to like speak up, right? Tell us what they thought and trust in their own ideas and run with them and pay it forward. So even as managers, they were evaluated on how well they were empowering their own teams, right? And so that's, I think, the kind of environment we ended up building. And I think sometimes it takes an outsider to be able to do that, because sometimes you as an outsider spot the gaps, right, in a way that or the opportunities for impact that you may not realize if you're in it day in and day out.
Absolutely. Now after AdSpark, you did a quick job with the Capitalist Partners, and then now you went full on founder. I want to understand now, how did Edamama come into play, and what was the biggest inspiration for you to come up? Because I heard from Foxmont and Kickstart that you started this when you weren't even here, or you grew this. Yeah. You were stuck somewhere. Can you talk about how Edamama was born and what were you trying to build when you built Edamama?
Sure. So after AdSpark, the decision to leave AdSpark was not an easy one to make, but I really felt like we had gotten the venture to a point where it was no longer a startup. It was a pretty stable venture. And I felt like it was time for me to go do something a bit more scary. And
not a lot of people had that balls, my God.
The honest truth here is that I didn't really know what I was going to do. I just knew that I felt ready. I felt like I had received 4 years or 5 years of solid training. And, you know, now I was ready to kind of venture out and try my hand at something. But I knew for a fact that I didn't want to just go after what I thought was opportunity. I wanted to dovetail it with what I knew I would be passionate about, like where I would wake up every day and not see it as a job, but something, something I'm super passionate about. And at the time I was still figuring it out. And inspiration for me really struck when my second child was born. So my daughter, who's now 8, is an AdSpark baby, right? She was with me when we started it. She came to our office on a regular basis, right? She was so much, I associate her
the
so
boss
much.
Boss baby.
That. Yeah, boss go. Baby. I associate her so much with that kind of phase of my professional life. Right. My son, Evan, was born at the end of 2017. Because I had left AdSpark by then, I was actually a pretty hands-on mom. And I remember I was trying to buy things online. And, you know, I was a bit more conscious of like my purchasing decisions and things like that. And I found the whole experience to be very challenging, right? So I would be complaining to my husband, like, I ordered this item online, but it's such terrible quality. Why would I pay full price for something like this when I wouldn't even give it to my child ultimately because I don't think it's safe, right?
Got it.
And that's really, I think, where the light bulb moment went off for me. I remembered from my AdSpark days, like every client we pitched to, right, Ron, whether it was the FMCGs or the banks, one of the key questions was like, we want to target globe moms, right? We want to find who the moms are in this globe customer database.
Correct.
And so I think I was reminded of that. And I you know, I think the insight was mothers are such powerful consumers. They are gatekeepers of their households, chief financial decision makers, whether they're working or not. This is a matriarchal society. Women are highly empowered.
Absolutely.
But their purchasing journey, their discovery experience online is far from ideal. And at the same time, they are extremely powerful influencers, right? They are intrinsically motivated to help each other make the right decisions. So that's kind of what was the path we started to go down to say, is there an opportunity to build something here that is a trust platform for mothers?
Got it. No, that's amazing. And that said, that's your why right there. This is your second rodeo as a mom. Now, I want to understand, how did you build this startup from that point on? Because again, this is the first time now, it's your shot, it's your capital, everything is yours. How did you then build it? And just a little bit of side note, why did you call it Edamama?
Yeah. So In terms of the journey to get started, I wanted to firstly build a prototype that I felt could be used to A, test demand in market, and also maybe raise a small seed capital investment that could then allow us to take it to the next level. So my starting point literally, Ron, was to, well, firstly, before I even decided I was going to do Edamama for sure, I did what most MBAs would do is I made an Excel file of different ideas. So I had about five I had yes. kind of been thinking about apart from this B2C in the parenting space. Got and it. Then I made like a whole scorecard, right? Of, you know, using the Ikigai framework, if you're familiar with Ikigai,
yep. right? That's very, so, that's the Japanese in you, right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's the Japanese. And so I
mega Venn diagram.
Yeah, right there. I did. But I did a weighted scorecard and Edamama came out as, you know, the highest scored.
What were the factors about yeah. Edamama that made you pursue it?
Well, the opportunity, right? Philippines has second highest birth rate in Southeast Asia, highest under 14 population, top 10 baby market globally.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah. 2 million babies born every year in the Philippines, right?
A lot of Filipinos make yeah. love. That's why.
So the opportunity, the pain points, right? And I had lived through those pain points. I think it was very clear to me. Third is the personal interest in it. You know, I love yeah. being a mom. It's my most important job. It's right. what I first and foremost identify with, right, is motherhood. And really, you know, the idea that this opportunity is not just to cater to the end consumer, but to also build an organization that is very supportive of parents and working moms like myself. And whether you're a parent, I mean, most people who work at Edamama today are not parents, but we really have tried to also reimagine the corporate workplace, the startup workplace by espousing a culture of flexibility, which, nice. You know, we can save for a separate topic, but yeah, so it was kind of all of these factors that made me say, I, you know, even if this venture doesn't succeed, at least I know I'm doing something I'm really passionate about. And I have done the homework to understand that there is some opportunity here.
Got it. And why again was it, did you call it edamama?
Oh, yeah.
Is it because of edamame, the beans?
Yeah. So if you've seen our logo.
Right.
Which was designed by one of my AdSpark colleagues, very sweetly.
There you go.
It has this icon, right, of an edamame bean, right? And you see like peas in a pod. And I think what we're trying to symbolize here is that it could look like a baby in a swaddle. It could look like a pregnant mom, right? But it also has peas in a pod. And you know, it's to symbolize that it takes a village, right? It takes a community to thrive in parenting. And
absolutely.
Yeah, so that's kind of the logo, but the name itself, you know, I think it can mean so many different things. Aide maman in French actually means to help a mother. But wow. Edamama could also mean educating a mama, right? And we wanted to have mama in the name because the focus is the woman, right? It's the focus is the mother, as opposed to saying it's about all about the child. It's about empowering the woman behind the mama, but also the mama in every stage of her journey as before, during, and after having a baby.
That's amazing. Now, Bella, again, I wanted to drill down on this amazing story that I've heard about you, that you built this when you weren't even here. Can you talk about how that happened? How did you even build away from your home market?
Yeah, so we raised our seed round for Edamama in 2019.
Okay.
And we built the prototype, as I mentioned, you know, that's what I wanted to do first, and built the product up. We were at that time about a team of 10 people. Okay. And we were, you know, we even sent out invitations. We were going to do this big press event in BGC, launch event. And then COVID happened, right? And I suddenly found myself locked up in my apartment, about to launch a venture with two really frustrated children, literally killing each other in my apartment. And then my daughter's school telling me I had to homeschool her.
What?
And, you know, I think for us, my husband and I looked at each other and said, okay, you know, how long is this going to last? I remember on May 24th or something of 2020. So we have just taken Edamama live. And I saw something on Facebook to say there was a flight going to Australia. I didn't even consult Nish. I picked up the phone, called the call center and said, we'd like 4 tickets to get on this flight. And they said, sorry, we only have 3 tickets. So I said, okay, put this fourth one on the wait list. If it's meant to be, it's going to happen. We get a call like an hour later from PAL saying the 4th ticket is available. Do you want to take it? And you know, Ron, it was not a calculated move. Like we literally didn't plan it, right?
Right. Leap of faith.
Yeah, they became available and 24 hours later we flew out.
That's crazy.
It's the same time zone as Manila.
Yep.
Our kids are in school and I'm living with my in-laws, which is really fun. And we have made it work, you know, so we have, in some ways, the way we really like to think about it is we are still in Manila. We're just working from home.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, that's the whole dynamic now that the startups that are thriving in this pandemic are the ones who are fully and was able to adapt fast into this new setup and are, you know, able to still trudge on and even reach greater heights, which again, you guys were able to do.
Yeah. I mean, we came here literally with clothing for one season, which was when we arrived last year, it was winter in Australia. So we came with all our woolies. We did not expect that we would have to, you know, now.
Now you have to have Bible bombs.
Yeah, we now have an entire season, a full year season worth of wardrobing. But, you know, we're keen to get back as soon as possible. It's been really chaotic trying to balance kind of what we think is best for our kids versus the business. But, you know, so far so good. We have felt no disruption to our ability to grow Edamama. And I think, yes, I think let this be a case study, right? That
absolutely
remote-based work, working from anywhere is here to stay, right? And
correct.
The more quickly we get used to it and comfortable with it, the better it is for everyone. And I think our people too appreciate so much. Like we ask all the time, we ask our team, are you guys ready to come back into an office? And I think, of course, the warehouse is an exception. We have a big operations team on the ground that's working in the warehouse. But for those of us, you know, in
back office
departments, I mean, it's so far, I think people really appreciate not having to have the pressure to come back into an office.
Totally agree. And in the P&A team, at least I'll just share a little bit on my end. More than half of the people that I've hired over the past 12 months, I've never seen in person. I think they're all catfish.
Yeah.
I call them catfish. Like, are you real or are you just catfishing?
Yeah, it's the same. Although I miss it, right? I'm sure you miss nothing can replace, right?
Correct, correct.
The conversations around the water cooler, as they say.
Yeah, but safety is paramount at this moment. And then and at this point, we have to take our last break. And when we come back, I want to now know how we were able to grow the team and now achieve greater heights with Edamama. And then we're going to pay it forward with a couple of questions that I prepared for you. We'll talk about that more after the break.
Hi, I'm RJ Ledesma. Get inside the heads of the country's sharpest and most innovative business personalities and entrepreneurs. Hack your way to success as you learn more about how they think about business. What are their best practices and success secrets? How do they innovate their businesses during the pandemic? And what opportunities do they see in the new normal? Join me on the RJ Ledesma podcast.
Hey guys, 2021 has been an exciting year for cryptocurrency because of Bitcoin getting all-time highs almost at a daily basis now. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know that I use this app called B21 to invest in my crypto assets. And what I love about B21 is they've made it so easy for me to invest because I do not have the time to watch the charts and see the dynamic flows of all these crypto assets. And because it's so easy to use, I was able to make massive gains right when Bitcoin was making that bull run. Now, I don't want to be the only guy who's actually benefiting from this because as a hustler, you need to make your money work for you. So download the B21 app now in the Google Play and App Store and use the code HUSTLE to see how easy it is to use and invest in your cryptocurrency now.
Hey!
And we're back from the break. We're still with Bella Gupta D'Souza again, who is all the way down under all this time. But again, because again, you were operating on the same time zone. That's amazing. And I think you're now in the same four seasons that you were there right smack in the middle last year. It's winter in Australia again. But again, I want to now understand, Bella. So you told us how you're able to pivot your family. But I want to also understand, remotely, growth won't stop. And if you said, we said it was seamless, how did you grow the team and the product at the same time from that point on?
I think we have a very ambitious goal for Edamama as a whole. Like, we believe so much in what we're doing. And I think by having that clarity of vision and that focus and ambition really helps with everything else. It helps in how you think about product development. It helps in how you think about, you know, how do you give the best customer service to your customers? It really certainly helps on the talent side of things, right? Yeah. So when I started Edamama, I did also think about all the people I had crossed paths with in the mm-hmm. Philippines in my 4.5 years at mm-hmm. this point there. And I made a list of people that I would have loved to work with again. And so I literally reached, some of them I hadn't spoken to in a very long time. I reached out to them and said, I'm thinking about this venture. Would love to know if you want to be part of it. And, you know, and many of these people started part-time. It was like, let's test the waters. Let's see how things are going. Mm-hmm. I don't feel comfortable at this point asking you to quit your job just yet. Right. And so that's how we started it. One of my first key hires was Kate De Los Rios, mm-hmm. who came on board and was, you know, has like incredible background in content and marketing. And for me, I knew with Edamama, I really wanted to have a very discovery-led experience. And content is such a big part of this, right?
Correct.
So I thought about the people I'd worked with at AdSparks, so our head of marketing, Dan. I reached out to her and invited her to come on board. Mm-hmm. So really bringing in these individuals from there, we then, you know, did. And the third key hire for me was, I said I wanted to get an HR person very early on in our journey, ahead of people. Because to me, I think the conventional wisdom is you hire your first HR person when you're a team of 10. But for me, the way I've thought about it is you need an HR or a people-oriented person from day one who understands what culture you're trying to build and is that support to you, right? So whether it's hiring, whether it's thinking about what kind of work culture you want to build and really crystallizing that from day one. So even when we interview, even when we onboard, and as we go through this journey together as a company, everybody is on the same page and understands what we're trying to do. And so I think we try to really test for that even when we, you know, recruited or interviewed candidates for Edamama. And I think, you know, that's kind of where this snowballed into now what is a team of over 100 people.
Right? What? No? Yeah, what, 100? That's crazy.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing, amazing. Now, I want to understand also product side.
Yep.
You got to make sure that whatever you built holds up, especially if it's B2C and then, you know, sales happen. The last thing you want to do is a slow site or a slow app that's not even going to hold up. How did you build product? And I think, again, coming from your AdSpark background, you know a thing or two about good products. Were there things that you applied from your AdSpark hustle that you now also applied in Edamama as well?
Yeah, AdSpark was a little different, right? Because we were more of a services company.
Right.
Our products were not as, I guess, tangible as Edamama being a platform that people go to. And, you know, the product is so central to everything we're doing.
Correct.
For me, I felt like we had a first mover advantage. I looked around and saw there was really no mother and child focused vertical e-commerce platform at the time, but speed was of essence. And we wanted to get like this first mover advantage, knowing that e-commerce was starting to get really exciting in the Philippines. Yep. But, you know, the reality is I felt like I knew I wanted a really modern tech stack mm-hmm. and I wanted a team that could build it super fast. And I wasn't able to find the right combination of team and tech, I guess.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Super
and so
hard.
I, having, you know, the benefit of understanding the Indian landscape a little bit, decided to go with a development team out of India to build the prototype
wow.
initially.
There's a lot of talent out there.
Yeah.
Really good too. My goodness.
Yeah. And because the startup ecosystem in India is just at another level now, right? I think we were able to rapid prototype it super fast. I see myself more than anything as a product person. So I was very involved in the product designing and development process. And it was a bit of a leap of faith on the tech stack because admittedly, I am not a technical founder. And I think this is important for anybody hearing this who is also a non-technical founder. You know, really do your homework, really do your research, and make sure you have a technical advisor that is helping you make decisions very early on about what stack you go with, because that is going to really make or break your product.
It's expensive to rewrite the whole shit. Oh my God. That
it is. Yeah.
And you got to make sure that, especially if you're going to create, it's easy to create an MVP, right? Prototype, you know, several hundred users, fine. But you want to make sure that whatever you're going to build will scale as you want to scale operations as well. Because if it breaks and it doesn't hold up, then you're back to square one.
Right, right. Absolutely.
It's okay. So I want to now find out, how did you now scale or get traction? Which is, again, the holy grail of startups, right? At the end of the day, you can build a team, you can build a product. But if users don't come and they don't do repeat purchase, which is the name of the game in this type of business, which is MRR, the monthly recurring revenue. I would suppose that would be one of your main metrics.
Mm-hmm.
How did you scale ops and get traction?
Most of our growth in our early phases has been quite organic. And that has been a function of a couple of things. One is because the pandemic happened, I think it was a blessing in disguise for us because we at the time were deemed as a non-essential service. So we couldn't launch Edamama with the products that we had when the pandemic started. Okay. So we were forced to think community first. So instead of the product being the platform, the product for us became an initiative we started on social media called hashtag happy at home. And again, I think this goes back to the fact that because a lot of the people in our founding team are mothers and they were living this at home, right? We all found ourselves stuck at home with kids, unsure what to do. We said, let's turn that into an engagement on social media where we hopefully can inspire, entertain, and educate mothers, right, around how to survive the uncertainty that is the pandemic. And we really did a combination of fitness videos, you know, inspiring content for kids, helping celebrate some of the festivals, et cetera, which I think drew in a community of moms all organically, right? So we didn't do any paid like ads, et cetera.
Nice.
Everything was organic. Yeah, we boosted some of the videos, but there were videos that were getting shared thousands of times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that community start really helped with the, so when May, Mother's Day last year was when we finally were able to turn on the Edamama platform from the e-commerce side. So I feel
perfect
like we
timing.
Already had, yeah, we already had a base that we could communicate that to. And then, you know, we started a referral program that I think also really helped with raising traction.
That's amazing. Organic is always the key because, again, especially, you know, in a cutthroat environment also, that's, again, retail. If you don't find an organic way to grow your startup, you're always going to be paying your way for your user base. And if you don't, especially if you don't return, that churn is going to look really, really expensive, even if you do retargeting and remarketing down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we do a lot of paid marketing now. So don't get me wrong. I think, you know, we're in a time now where because we have so few options in terms of how to reach customers, you know, you do have to do a fair amount of paid marketing as well.
Absolutely. No, but at the start, you know, that organic is always key. Because if you can't acquire an organic user base up front, which hopefully you'll turn into your champions, it's going to be hard to snowball that if you don't have a solid base.
Yeah.
Now, I want to find out a couple more before we let you go today. In terms of your biggest challenge as a founder coming from, again, AdSpark and all your previous hustles, what do you think was your biggest challenge as a full-time founder, especially being remote? This has been since last year all the way to today.
I think for me, finding balance is still a struggle. And I think it's important to say this because it's dangerous for me. I feel I have a responsibility to be very honest about what it's like to be a founder. And
yeah,
especially for women who are listening to this, who are thinking about going down this path, you know, there are a lot of factors that have helped me along the way. You know, I have a very supportive spouse who's as invested in this venture now as I am. I have very understanding kids, right? To a very large extent, who have been on this
real bosses.
Yeah, but you know, it's still a struggle, Ron, to find that balance. And, you know, between personal time, health, you know, working hours, all of that. And, you know, I think we are all feeling it, even as founders, even though we feel like we're owners of our ventures and we should have full control over our time. It's not the case, right? And yeah, I think it's important that we also therefore appreciate that we need to set cultures in our company where balance is also prioritized, and also set expectations with our shareholders and stakeholders that, you know, at the end of the day, like, personal well-being and health is incredibly important as well, right? Because without it, nothing else really matters.
Got it. All right, sounds good. Now I want to ask you some pay it forward questions to those people that are listening, especially the mamas listening to this episode. And I'm very curious of this too. What do you think are the parallels between raising a startup and raising a child? Because again, I would imagine that there are similar things because they're both needy. They both need a lot of attention and they cry a lot. But what do you think are the parallels that you can see that you do as a mom and also as a startup founder?
Yeah, I think firstly, both of them require you to give up on sleep, right? right?
Sleep busters.
I mean, I don't remember the last time I ever slept in, right?
Oh, man.
And so I think, you know, jokes aside, I think my parenting style, I'd like to think, is similar to how I try to lead my teams, which is really focusing on empowerment and respect for differences. And I think so many of us as parents are very, and potentially as leaders, are very tempted to apply our own values and our own expectations on our people, right? And even on our kids, right? We want to live vicariously through our kids. And I really believe in empowerment of my kids. I really want them to grow up to feel like they can make their own decisions. They can speak their minds. And I hope that we can kind of also draw similar parallels to the workplace.
But my last question is the growth. Because when I can only empathize with a startup growth, it's the best feeling in the world when milestones are hit. Is that also the same with kids when when your kid hits a milestone and when your startup hits a milestone? Is that the same feeling as well?
Yeah, and you want to share it, right? Like, I think when your child does well, your reaction is not, oh, I'm going to take full credit for that, right? It is genuine happiness, right? To say like, they did it, right? We did it. Rather than saying it's about me. And I think I feel the same way about the company. Like when we, you know, last month was our best month ever since we started the business. And it really felt like it was a collective celebration. It was really feeling like every single person played a part in that versus one or two people, right?
Absolutely.
So I think it's a very similar sentiment.
And no amount of lost sleep will eclipse the feeling of joy that you feel at that moment.
Right. Totally.
It's worth it. Right. I don't care if I only slept 3 hours, but hit this milestone, we good. Right there.
Exactly.
All right. Now, last question. I'll go a little nostalgic here because we're talking about moms and whatnot. But, you know, at the end of the day, they always say that the conscience in your head and and it's the voice of your mom. And I totally believe, I was raised by a single mom since I've always been a mama's boy. And a lot of what I am now, I owe it to my mom with how she raised me. But I want to find out from your point of view, Bella, what do you think was the best advice you got from your mom that you still live through today?
That's a great question. And I think I want to try to answer that by describing what my mom is like, because I think the way I think about her influence on me is more driven by her actions rather than her words. I think my mom is someone who has always somehow managed to live so fully with everything she's done. And just to put some color on this, you know, when we moved to Japan, when we moved to Thailand, my mom was a stay-at-home mom raising three kids. She had me when she was 3 months. She was pregnant with me 3 months after giving birth to her first child.
Wow. Right?
Yeah. And so it was really, I'm sure it was really hard for her, but she never let us see her get tired. And she always brought her A game to everything she did. And she got a job in Japan as a school teacher. She did the same in Thailand. But every night we had the most extravagant dinner meal on the table,
wow,
right?
Amazing.
And so she lived life really multitasking to such an incredible degree. And I find myself doing that today, right? Sometimes I feel like I'm morphing into my mom, because at the end of the day, like, no matter how crazy my day has been, if I don't cook for my kids, I feel like I have failed, right?
Wow.
And that's a bit of an exaggeration, but I really try to live life fully the way she did, which was to serve her family, to serve her husband, and then to be this incredible professional at the same time.
It's amazing. So show and tell at the same time. And look at you now. You being the tiger mom.
Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey Hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon,
but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disperse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. As well, again, thank you very much, Bella, for such an amazing episode. But before I let you go, what do you guys have some real announcements to make very soon? What's up next? Just give us a glimpse of what's going to be Edamama in the near future. And if they want to check out Edamama or even collaborate and work with you, well, where do they go and how do they do that?
Sure, Ryan. So please visit us, edamama.ph. What you will see on the Edamama platform today is really the first phase of our journey as a company, which is the most trusted and loved products and services for mother and child. We now have over 800 brands, over 20,000 SKUs. We're adding new brands every day. But our vision as a company actually is to become the leading parenting brand in the Philippines. We are working on a very exciting model in rolling out our own products down the line and also going omni-channel, right? So we want to actually roll out offline and online store concepts. So please stay tuned. It's going to be an incredible ride for us. We're always looking for great talent. So whether you're an engineer or in business development, we'd love to hear from you. Hello at edamama.ph is the best way to reach us.
There you go. And you can watch out for their big announcement. And that's going to shatter all records in the startup ecosystem. I'm not going to talk about it. Just watch out. But hopefully when this comes out, it's already out. Let's see. But just watch out. Again, Bella, thank you very much.
Thanks,
before
John.
I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I think now by this time, we should have Facebook also. And again, if you did say some jargon, don't worry. It's going to be in the show notes in hustleshare.com. And lastly, if you want to be part of the Hustle Share community, it's going to be Facebook at the Hustle Share community. And again, Bella, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron. Take care. Stay safe. Bye.
And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.